Welcome to By the Players, a community game club. My name is Marcus, and here with my good friend Michael, also known as Drellish, we are hosting By the Players, a monthly meetup with members of the Trophy Room community to do a deep dive discussion on a particular video game. This month, I'm very excited that we are going to be discussing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So if you're listening to this and are interested in joining us for a future meetup, keep an eye on the By the Players channel in the Trophy Room Discord. It's where Michael and I will post information about future games, sign-up forms, and discuss the game that we're playing. You don't have to be a patron. All are welcome to join. We do give priority to people who haven't previously attended, so if you are at all interested, please sign up. We would love to have you. Now, before getting into our Rebirth discussion, I wanted to make note that our next game, as you've probably heard on recent episodes of the Trophy Room, is God of War Ragnarok. The deadline to sign up will likely have passed by the time you're listening to this, but at the moment we are currently have one or two spots available. So if you're at all interested in joining us, just reach out to Michael or myself and we'll see if we can squeeze you in. Okay. So with all that out of the way, I'd like to introduce the fine folks joining us for today's discussion. First off, we have, of course, as always, my partner in crime, Michael, also known as Drellish, who I believe just finished Rebirth yesterday.
Yep, I did. I mainlined the last few chapters and I'm really excited to talk about it. I did tear up a little bit. So, yeah, amazing story.
Thanks, Michael. I'm sure we'll get into all how those tears came about. Next, we couldn't have had a Final Fantasy discussion without Colin, also known as Delicious Morsels in the Discord. How are you doing today, Colin?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back, as always. Looking forward to this.
Thank you. Next, Gabe, also known as Dasime in the Discord. Gabe is our last-minute fill-in. I really appreciate you coming by. He was here for the Final Fantasy VII Remake discussion, I believe, in February. So good to see you, Gabe.
Yeah, good to be here. Finished Rebirth a little more than a month ago, currently on my way through the Platinum. It's been a while to play over 140 hours in this game.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big one. Okay, and somebody who already has the Platinum in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, John, or better known as Hambone Johnny in the Discord. How are you doing today, man?
Doing well. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me. Excited to be here. Happy to talk Rebirth. This is going to be a good discussion.
Awesome. Thanks, John. And then we also have Esten, or better known as Solo in the Discord. Solo joined us for the Final Fantasy VII Remake discussion as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me again. Come back around. Yeah, definitely. Glad to be here and good to see all of y'all.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Solo. Next, of course, as always, we have Mr. Joseph Moran, Mr. Badbit himself. Good to see you, Joe.
I did not beat the game. But this time I have good reasons. Life came in the way, opportunities arose, and not enough time to play all these games happened in between. But I will be with you guys right after like the Gold Saucer stuff. I'll step out, but I'm excited to air my frustrations and my praise with this game. And I think some questionable decisions by Cloud. So I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe. And he made it in under the wire. Last but never least, Mr. Kyle Stevenson. How are you doing today, man?
I want to destroy my internet provider so badly right now. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about Rebirth, and I'm excited to tell Joe how much he's wrong about Rebirth.
Oh.
Ah, there we go.
Okay. It's going to get saucy.
I love it. I love it.
Going. We got it going.
Okay. So before, as we do with each one of these, before we get into the Final Fantasy VII Remake discussion proper, we like to stretch our legs a little bit with an icebreaker style question. So for this month, the question is, what is a game that needs a Final Fantasy VII style remake, in your opinion? How about you start us off, Michael?
So as I'm starting off, it's starting to like really rain cats and dogs. So I'm not sure whether this is
Sound great for my end.
Over the mic. Okay, then
Yeah, you're good.
that's perfect. It's an interesting question because Final Fantasy VII Remake went such a route where it's quite divisive with regards to what it did to the original game. And if some games come to mind, Marcus, you know that I will say The Witcher, but I won't. I would like to pull in a game like Chrono Trigger to kind of see what would Chrono Trigger look like if it kind of gets the remake treatment. However, also based on the success of Baldur's Gate, I would like to kind of see the original Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 go through something similar, because I think that that would be a very interesting IP to get this treatment. So those are my initial thoughts. Let me quickly see who else wants to say something about it. Maybe you, Colin.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. How about you? Go ahead, Colin.
Final Fantasy VIII, I
Ooh.
think. It is for a long time been an absolute favorite in the franchise of mine. I mean, I've told the story before. Part of the reason I discovered Trophy Room Podcast was Kyle talking about On Beyond, how much he loves it. And I agree. I think the game gets a lot of unnecessary hate just being misunderstood. People will play to the, won't even get through disc one and then be like, well, Squall is such a trash character, but they miss all of the character development he gets after disc one. I think actually making the game in the style of Final Fantasy VII, hopefully not as stretched out as VII's remake was, but just enough to like bring that story into the modern era, I think would be really cool. Because the Gunblade is better than the Buster Sword. I said what I said.
Very nice. Awesome. Dave will be happy to hear
Yeah, I was gonna say.
that.
Gabe, how about you?
Well, to me, it's Final Fantasy IX. Also, I wouldn't like to have such a stretched out remake, and I don't think it would fit this kind of remake, changing many things and making alternate universes and things like that. It doesn't really fit into that story, but it has always been one of my favorites, and I think one of the reasons people don't really like Final Fantasy VIII is because it's between these two, because they're such iconic instances of Final Fantasy. But also, not talking too much about RPGs, I would love to see a remake of the God of War trilogy in that way. I think it would fit better with the new with how they treat Kratos in these new games. It would be good. It would be good to have a new remake. Thinking about that and tying it better with the new story.
That's a really good call. I like that one a lot.
Absolutely.
Ambone.
All right, I'll maybe take a little different tact here. I'm going to say the original Assassin's Creed needs a
Oh, wow.
nice
Yes.
remake. Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot to chew on there with the story. The combat is so much better in the more recent Assassin's Creeds. I think they can really do something special with that if they went at it.
Cool, thanks, man.
Nice one.
And Solo.
I'll probably say I'm go deep dive here. One of my cherished games from when I had my PlayStation 1, I'd pull back, and people have heard me talk about this game a lot, Parasite Eve. I'd like to see them and also bring in Parasite Eve Part 2 with it, and also just have them remake and repolish that and see how that would look brought into a new era. And also, I think it's time to actually allow a lot of exposure to people that don't even know about that game with current generation of kids that are now playing on PlayStation.
It was on my list as well, actually. Yeah, I would love to see that. I haven't played through the second one and only didn't make it all the way through the first, but I think it could use a modern remake. I think it'd be great. Joe.
Yeah, I got three that come to mind. And actually, all three of them are they're a Nintendo, a PlayStation, and an Xbox game. One that comes to mind, I don't know why. I just want to see it with prettier graphics, is Mario 64. I want to tug on that Mario's little nose and like make him look like all sorts of stuff and just modern graphics, you know, use that Odyssey engine. The other one that I think rolls into this, which is Kingdom Hearts. Kingdom Hearts 1, I think, is a great game to remake and maybe kind of set the story on a path that is a bit more linear and not so much like kooky and crazy as we get to the 0.5, 0.2 and a half Birth by Sleep and stuff like that. It's also a game that I absolutely love, and now I would understand all those Final Fantasy characters in there. And then last but not leastly, I would love to see my beloved Gears of War be remade from the ground up using Unreal Engine 5 and being day on day on PlayStation and feeling those dual senses, like just the chainsaw. Ooh wee. That would make me a happy boy.
Ooh-wee. Kyle, thanks, Joe.
Yeah, obviously Final Fantasy 8 and 9, pretty much any of the old Final Fantasies. Because I think we're spoiled with what FF7 Remake and now Rebirth have given to us with these worlds. And plus, like, I don't know if you caught it, Colin, but like the little Zell poster, I think, like in Tifa's room, it looks like Zell in Rebirth. He's like doing his like uppercut punch on a poster somewhere in her room.
Interesting.
Yeah, like they're dropping a little hints here and there. But
Cool.
like another publisher that does extremely well with remakes is Capcom. I would love Dino Crisis to get the RE style remake. That'd be sweet. And Onimusha. I love Onimusha, and it's been gone for far too long, and get that like a RE2 style remake would be dope. And then I can't not say Resistance. Bring Resistance back in like a brand new first person shooter, and how much they've learned since then. Like, Insomniac can do no wrong in my eyes.
Yeah, a lot of good choices there. I will quickly go through a couple of mine. Maybe heavily rumored, Joe and Kyle probably know better than I. Fallout 3, I think, would be a good one to go back to. I tried playing it not recently, but especially given the success of the show of late. I went back to it a few years ago and found it kind of unplayable, at least for me. It's pretty dated, so I think that would be a good one. And the other one is a game that I've never played, but probably won't in its current state, is Metal Gear Solid. I'd love to go right to the first one, and get a good remake of that.
Yeah, Fallout
So,
3,
yeah.
that was on my short list too, because like with the TV show, I'm like, oh my God, I want to play Fallout 3 the most. And then like hearing everybody going, all right, this is how you have to play it if you're playing on PS3, I'm like, oh, it's not like, oh, because this is the right way of playing. It's like, no, this will make the game playable. Yeah, no, they gotta get that remastered done, because I really want to get my hands on it real bad too.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Now, before I toss things over to Michael to lead the discussion about Rebirth, I just wanted to take a moment to note that today's discussion will be obviously full spoilers. And it's going to be full spoilers for all games in the Final Fantasy VII universe. It can be maybe a bit of a challenge to talk about the story of Rebirth without knowing the story of the other games. I don't know how much we'll get into the other games, but it's all fair game. So that means we'll talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, obviously, today, but we also could touch on the events of Final Fantasy VII Remake, but also Crisis Core, the original Final Fantasy VII. So it's all fair to be brought up here today. If you don't want to know what happens in those games, you've been warned, so get out now, okay? Without further ado, I will pass things over to my good friend Michael. It is all yours, my friend.
Thank you, Marcus. Let's quickly go through a little fact sheet we put together for Final Fantasy. Rebirth, developed obviously by Square Enix, Creative Business Unit 1. It was released. I mean, I can't believe that I actually finished this game yesterday. So the 29th of February 2024, so only this year, on PS5 only. Obviously, there are speculations with regards to what happens perhaps to the next one, but it'll be exclusive, yes or no, so that'll be a topic for a future discussion. It rated a 93 on OpenCritic, I think 94, it's down to 93 at the moment, and on Metacritic it has a 92. So it's characterized by a refined and improved combat system compared to a remake. So the elemental ability usage to replace MP usage is one factor. There is a better party management and other quality of life improvements. Also, the aspect of the open world exploration and side content has been introduced. So there are multiple open world segments. So if you haven't played that, that's really a welcome change. There are obviously combat challenges with specific monsters. There are portal relic quests, summon shrines. There are lots and lots and lots of mini games. And yeah, all obviously there to offer you a very varied game experience. So this is perhaps also one of the games that has the largest video game soundtrack ever produced, with over 400 tracks. There are over 7 CDs. And you might know Nobuo Uematsu composed the song No Promises. I think it's No Promises to Keep, right? I think I just made a little spelling mistake there. So No Promises to Keep. There's also the Loveless version, which if you've played the game, you've come across it. And I think quite a prophetic song, now that I finished the game yesterday. So my question to all of you, and let's see what this does with you, is how did the introduction of the parallel timelines, sorry, spoiler Joe, and other major narrative changes like Zack Survival affect your enjoyment of the story?
Don't feel bad about me. You know me with spoilers, okay. I don't care. But also, okay, like, I knew that was the case because, like, from what I was always aware of is, like, Zack's dead and here he's very much alive. So I knew something was up. I knew something was up. Don't feel bad for
it. It's already prevalent in Remake, right? As Remake ends. So
yeah, there's already a ton of stuff that has or has not happened that shouldn't have. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Okay, so who would like to tackle this question? Let's see. Who would like to go for it?
I feel like Kyle's got some theories. You want to start us off, Kyle?
I don't know how sane I will sound, or if I have it all, like, down pat.
The insaner, the better.
I definitely think towards the end of this game, it does get a little messy. And I was fine with it throughout. I think the ending and how they dealt with the Aerith scene, I'm still conflicted on. And like the little, with that being said, I love the little interjects of Zack here and there. Even though they were maybe a little too many and not a lot happening. I think specifically the one with, it's towards the end. It's when Zack is choosing to, you know, go to Biggs or go to Shinra. And just how they presented that, I was like, wait, what's happening? And it took me a little bit to realize, oh, we're seeing every outcome of him doing it. It's a little messy, I think, is my biggest word when it comes to the parallel timelines that we're getting in Rebirth. Even though I enjoyed it, it's a lot.
It's a lot to take, right?
I'd be curious to know how many of us, if anybody wants to maybe jump in and answer this, is like, did you understand what was happening on the first pass? Or did you have to kind of, like I did, watch a video or two to kind of explaining what the heck happened? Does anybody kind of get it the first go around?
I think I kind of did, but at after some point, I mean, maybe I didn't. I also watched some videos, and there are multiple ways in which people interpret what happened. I know there are at least three timelines, because there is the one that we play, the one that Zack saves Cloud, and the other one that Zack goes to Biggs. Indeed, at the end of the game, we see all three of them. But I agree with Kyle. I think I'm concerned that in the third game, we're going to have some kind of lost treatment in terms of the TV show, in which they won't be able to actually untie everything. I'm hopeful this it's not going to be the case, but right now it's in the weird second game of a trilogy situation where we don't really know what's going to happen. So I think that's the reason where everybody's so confused. And I agree with Kyle. I think I'm not really a fan of the final Aerith scene. I think maybe it's because I'm such a fan of the original. Aerith's death in the original game is such a heartbreaking moment, and in this game, if I felt like I didn't feel the same way because the game tried to make it as she were still alive, and I didn't feel the same way. It wasn't such a surprise. Obviously, I knew what happened, and she knew what would happen as well. But I thought it wasn't as heartbreaking as it was in the original game. Which is a shame. I understand the creative decision they took, but still, I'm still conflicted about that. I'm not really a fan of it. But I think I know where they want to go with the timeline thing, but I'm concerned that's not going to
Be
be the way
wrapped up.
that. Yeah, exactly.
The way it should
Yeah,
be.
I definitely think it was a little bit confusing. I definitely had to watch some videos. One of the videos pointed out that I forget the little dogs in each of the
Stamp.
timelines. Yeah, the
And the
stamp, right? Yeah,
stems.
and that's how you can tell which timeline you're kind of in, which I thought was cool. I didn't pick up on that until somebody pointed it out to me.
Same
But yeah,
here.
I am concerned on how they're going to wrap this up, and it's almost like I have the feeling that if almost anything is possible and everything is possible, then what's really real and does this matter almost? So
That's a
it's
really
going to
good
be,
question.
you know,
Yeah.
It's the
I
best
don't know.
question.
Because like how do you make a multiverse story feel important if this is just a thread to an overall larger thing at play? And I think like one of the things that like the MCU has tried to say is like, well, if this one thread breaks, all the threads break. And maybe that's what, that's what this game needs is like that thing of like, oh no, all these things are at play if this goes awry. As someone who hasn't beaten the game, I have other issues with this story. But I want to hear what Solo thinks. Solo, what are you thinking, man?
Oh, I mean, I like the fact that they brought in Zack because personally, after playing Crisis Core and then playing 7 Remake, I identify more with Zack because I like him as far as his personality. I think Cloud's a bit like stiff and sometimes needs a slap on the back of the head.
Same.
I don't really like his character. I think he's rather dull. I mean, I know I just don't understand why, like, he is like so many of the gals through the series like him. I'm like, I think Zack's much more of the kind of charismatic, more attractable of the two. But in any event, I'm glad they brought him in because I like playing more, having him more on the scene. I wish there had been more playtime as him on that level. As far as the timelines, I kind of knew kind of what was going on throughout. I didn't really need so much as far as like, okay, let me stop and see, what in God's name is going on here? I mean, I was able to follow to a point. Toward the end there, though, at the end game, when it came to like into the boss fights, and then it was the Dark Whispers and the White Whispers and stuff like that. Much like kind of like I'm a big Xenoblade fan. Much like that, I love the Xenoblade games. Invariably, at some point though, after I beat the game, I do have to sit down. I do have to watch a YouTube video of like, okay, let me digest all this and theory crafting and what I just watched and what I just did, so I can like kind of cast net wise take in what all was just presented to me. And so I can see from the 30,000 foot view of like what all was happened. And so much like that, after I beat the game, I went and watched a YouTube video so I can just kind of see, okay, what was Aerith seeing here? What did this mean as far as like going into like, into the planet? And, you know, now that she is being what I see as like a part of the force in a way, you know, is she like, you know, is she not part of the force or part of the planet? Is she part of the planet, or is she just kind of talking like Sephiroth through like a different timeline? And I already kind of felt like that they were not going to kill her off, because I'm like, you know, if you're going to remake the game, I'm like, why do the same story beats? So I mean, I didn't feel like, yeah, they're not going to kill her off. They're going to try and like twist it somehow. So like, yeah, she's alive somewhere, and I'm just interested to see in the next game how they're going to have her communicating with Zack the way they have.
I definitely like the Aerith being like the Joker to Batman in Arkham Knight.
Okay.
Like where Aerith is just kind of like only seen by Cloud and could communicate with Cloud and everyone else can't. And it's just kind of like sticking with Cloud. I do like that from that's what I gathered from like the last scene of the game.
And I think Sephiroth is going to be able to see her too.
Oh,
Oh, yes.
1 million percent.
Yeah.
1,000% I think he does. But I'm with you, Solo, where I do think why call it a remake if you're not going to mix up the biggest thing of FF7, really, that I could see being changed. I don't want to spoil further questions, so I'll leave it there. But I have a lot of thoughts,
She's
especially about
Obi-Wan, dude.
the last 45 minutes.
She's Obi-Wan. Strike me down, I become more powerful than you could possibly imagine.
You never imagine, yeah.
Also, would you like some flowers?
Marcus, let's quickly hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I probably echo a lot of the same sentiments that have already been expressed. I think that I'm kind of like coming to the realization, I wasn't sure how to feel about the multiple timeline kind of aspect to remake. And I would say I'm concerned, not the biggest fan, particularly kind of like just the introduction of so many different timelines. I think there are at least four, because there are four versions that have been pointed out in a video that I watch. So I didn't catch them in real time, but four versions of that stamp dog. So there are at least four timelines that they'd displayed. It feels like a lot. It feels like there's a lot going on. I'm curious, but maybe a little concerned as to how they're going to kind of tie that all up in the final game. So I think like in retrospect, I probably would have preferred maybe a little bit more straightforward remake than kind of the introduction of so many different timelines. But that's not to say I didn't enjoy the game, which we'll get into further. But this multiple timeline stuff is not. Not my favorite, not my favorite.
Let me quickly give you my two cents. So I finished the game yesterday and obviously had lots of thoughts once I'd done it. And funny enough, Gabe, you mentioned Lost, and I also kind of thought of Lost to kind of say, okay, there are all these parallel timelines. You know, how they're going to wrap it up. And I think I'm actually okay with, or I've kind of made peace with, the fact that they're not going to wrap up all four timelines, because I think only one timeline matters, right? And I think that's the one that they'll make sure that we have some sort of finality. I'm not sure whether we'll have the happy end that we are kind of all hoping for. But I'm totally okay with kind of being conflicted. And I also have my own theory over and above what the videos tell us or what the other explanations tell us. And that has to do warm with Cloud. And I'm kind of wondering whether Cloud is of the timeline where he's at with the others, because of a lot of things that have happened. We'll probably go into it a little bit later. And I'm kind of thinking, okay, is it for Cloud's also well-being that he is seeing Aerith compared to the rest? Definitely, Aerith has a role to play, because if you think of the final battle, the one sentence that Sephiroth says is, "I underestimated you," but he doesn't say that to Cloud. He says it to Aerith, right? And I'm kind of wondering whether the connection that he has with Aerith is a fact that kind of keeps him mentally stable, if that makes sense, right? And I think that the final question that Aerith asks him, referring to the song, I think Aerith kind of knows that Cloud can't live up to it. So I'll leave it at that.
I just really quickly, you talk about how
Okay.
like the timelines aren't probably, it's not all going to converge into one. There'll still be multiple
Yeah.
timelines. I do think they're setting up to where one of the timelines is the OG game,
Yeah,
just
I
to
think so
kind of
too.
make to preserve like
Totally.
that story and that version.
Totally. That's
I
what I'm saying. I
also,
don't think it's the happy ending. No, so.
yeah, absolutely. And I definitely can see that, like the Aerith we get at the end of this isn't actually Aerith, but Sephiroth messing with Cloud.
Yeah.
I could totally
Nice
see
one.
that being what he's doing, because again, I also watch a lot of videos, and a lot of my thoughts that I'm probably gonna bring are taken from them and just repurposing them here. Especially like Maximilian Dude, he's like a genius when it comes to this shit. I forgot which one that I watched, but I feel like in this timeline, Cloud is the one that killed Aerith. And we're gonna get the Aerith death scene in 3, and the realization that Sephiroth took over Cloud, like we've seen throughout this game, and he's the one that stabbed Aerith, and that's why we don't see the scene.
Makes sense.
I there's some tomfoolery going around, and
Well,
I yeah.
to support that, Kyle, Eris says one line to him, and it says, "Whatever happens, don't blame yourself." And for me, whatever happens, don't blame yourself, mean that there is a guilt aspect, right, that Cloud carries with him. And Aerith is fully aware of it. So I'm totally with you with regards
Especially
to when.
because the rest of the team wasn't there.
Totally.
They just walked up and saw Cloud holding Aerith. They have no idea what
Correct.
happened.
Correct.
So I definitely think we're seeing the scene, the actual scene, in the next game at some point.
Seven
I thought you'd been there
seconds.
for a minute. I thought you were going to say like that Aerith, over time, went into the next game, is actually going to go like dark. Kind of like Cloud went dark in this one, that Aerith is going to like get corrupted. And actually, she's going to become more of actually like the dark materia type,
Sure.
just because she becomes corroded by all that's happened in her memories. And I'm like, well, that would be definitely a different twist if they did that with like if the timeline somehow tainted her, all these timelines, and just mind melted her. I'm like, that would definitely be an interesting play as far as if they decided to remake Final Fantasy VII and run it up that way.
Yeah, that
I
makes sense
also.
because the white materia is now transparent, right? Because every time the whispers touch her, she loses some memories. So it makes sense because she's now kind of a blank slate. So it does make sense to go that way.
I'd actually like to see that.
Now, I haven't heard from Colin yet. I want to hear what Colin has to say.
Go, Colin.
So first and foremost, I kind of consign myself to all the way back with Remake to just kind of be along for the ride as far as any kind of wild, crazy shenanigans they change go. And I'm gonna let it play out and see how it goes from there. I'm not really thinking too hard as to whether or not it disappoints me or anything. But one interesting kind of theory that I came across in some of the YouTube videos that I watched after beating the game was that all of the multiple timeline stuff in the game, rather than thinking about it from like an MCU multiverse type thing, it's more all of these timelines are just inherent to the way that the life stream functions and the will of the planet. Because we know that Sephiroth's end goal is to basically destroy the planet, cause such a giant wound to the planet that he's wants to be at the center of that and absorb all of the souls and the energy stored in the life stream to become a perfect being himself. So we know that the planet doesn't want that, obviously. So it's trying to fight back. And through all of these different timelines that we're seeing through the life stream, I think we're seeing the planet trying to kind of weave its own perfect timeline in a way to fight back against what Sephiroth is trying to do, if that makes sense. I am by far and away not the person to consult as far as like advanced theory crafting in this game goes, but
I don't think anyone but Square Enix can answer those.
We're all just flying the plane through snow.
But that's what's kind of fun about this as well, is like if they were just remaking this game 1-to-1, we've got the answers already, if that's the case. Yeah. So the fact that they've given us all of this to talk about in the years between each part, I think is really neat.
Absolutely. I was just pondering the kind of thing, and when exactly will we get the third part where everything unfolds, unravels?
I really hope that they're able to land it in 2027.
Yeah,
because that's the 30th anniversary of the original game.
Ah,
and they've already got the story written, so, and all of the like the big open world assets are done. So there's a good chance we see it in 2027, and that'll be really cool.
I also think I read that they're not doing an intermission style DLC. So I think they're going full in on part 3.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think they're going to have to switch engines, right? Because Remake and Rebirth are on Unreal Engine 4. And I don't think the third one is going to be in that, because it's going to be way too old.
Totally with you. Let's move on to the next question, which is, which character moments stood out the most to you?
That's what I have one.
Yeah, go for it.
OG, I have... outside of the core members of the party, in the OG one, I did not care at all really about Kate, about Sid, and about Vincent. They were very like, they were there, they were cool. I enjoyed some of their story beats, but when Kate betrays the party in Rebirth, hit me so much harder in this game than in the OG one. I think they did Kate such a huge service in Rebirth. He became one of my favorite characters. Where in the old one, he was just kind of a throwaway cat on a Moogle. Like, it's just whatever. Yeah. He's just kind of a weird puppet thing.
But not to play, right? He was the worst to play, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I enjoy his gameplay in Rebirth. I do. Okay. It's definitely, I think... the more of like the skill based character, I think you definitely need to like really use
it. It takes some getting used to.
Absolutely. Yeah, if I could interject on Kate, I want to throw this out there. Like, my wife likes to watch me play certain PlayStation games. She'll like some, she don't care for it. This one she liked and she watched me play it. When Kate came on the scene and he started like making himself more presentable for any story beats, she said, "You need to watch that one. He's going to betray y'all." And I'm like, "Why? Why would you say that?" She goes, "No, she said, trust me. He's going to betray y'all."
Yeah.
Even Thomas said, "Don't level him up. Don't level him up."
Don't level him up. Right?
Well, like, so beautiful. The whole time, too, they make it blatantly opposite or obvious that the party doesn't trust him from the get-go this time through. Like, Cloud's the only one that's like, "We can trust him. I trust him. It's fine." But we all know Cloud's mental space isn't all there. So, like, that just made his eventual betrayal that we all knew was coming hit so much harder, because, like, we knew it was happening, they knew it was happening, and it still hit.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was so good. And just in case, I want to bring it up now before I forget it. Again, another shout out to, it might have been a Maximilian video that mentioned this that I completely missed. After the Cave of the Gi moment with Red and Barrett, After Barrett sees what Red has gone through, he never calls him Red for the rest of the game, and only refers to him as Nanaki, his given name, which is such a beautiful thing. And just the nuances of the characters with each other, I think, is the strongest thing of this game. The party is so strong. I can't wait to see how they expand on Cid. Even the little bit of Cid of like, oh, he had a thing with Aaron's mom at some point.
Yeah, that's my cool. man. You dirty dog.
We actually fight Vincent in Rebirth. Cool. Come on, that was cool as
hell.
That
was awesome.
I'm excited to see more of how Vincent's going to like open up a little bit more in the third game and learn about his backstory, because his backstory is crazy. It's just they nailed the characters, even like the Turks and whatever. I don't want to take everyone's time, but like everyone's so freaking cool.
Yeah, I mean, the characters are, the in my opinion as well, the star of this game. There's lots of great things about this game, but the character work is right at the top of the list. This game is really funny. I found it hilarious at moments. Lots of times I laughed out loud. When Red comes out at the Queen's Blood tournament wearing that
Amazing. Yeah.
My God, I could not... is howling. Even Barrett in the sailor's uniform is hilarious, right?
Yeah.
There's so many just one-off lines that none of it is coming to my head right now, but there's just this game is really funny. It's really funny.
Shout out to Yuffie. Yuffie's one-liners the whole game are great.
Yuffie is one of my favorite characters. Red. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go for it.
Oh, sorry. One of my favorites was when Yuffie finally joined up with the party and she does her big fancy introduction thing like she did in Intermission, and then it pans back to Cloud and he's just got this deadpan look in his face. He's just like, cool. He just walks off.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, okay, kid. Yeah. Which I know, I think we'll probably talk about like gameplay in a second, but like Yuffie was so much fun to play as, and like, I don't know, I like her spirit because I think I would be that spunky in that universe too, and like Red as well. I think one of my problems with this game, however, is the fact that like explore, you know, like I know Tifa's a large part of it, but like explore the characters we didn't get to explore before, like Red and like Yuffie. But like I feel like there was still too much like relationship building in this game where it's like, I know who Aerith is. I know these characters, and we can go a little bit more in depth with them, but like I don't need to be building relationships with them, because I felt like every time we were getting onto the main quest, it was like, actually there's a relationship thing with Barrett over here that you should be doing. And I'm like, but isn't this supposed to be the end of the world? and that's the one thing, is like the constant sidetracking that actually kind of took me out of the game quite a bit.
That's interesting. I love that. That was one of the highlights for me. But yeah, I could see it.
And I think it's one of those things. It's a me thing with like JRPGs in general. Because I know they all have that like sin of doing that, and that's the thing that usually takes me out of it. So like when they're like, you know, they're on the ship with the Queen's Blood minigame, I'm like, love that. But then it's like, let's go to Casa de Sol and, you know, get bikinis for Tifa. And I'm like, all right, for science. And then it's like, now let's go with these weightlifter bros. I'm like, okay, but like, fine. And then we're at the casino. I'm like, Jesus, where's the urgency, guys? You know, that's just the thing that took me out.
Very good.
I like going to Casa de Sol. That was fun. I mean, I enjoyed that. And as far as like the characters, I never played the DLC of Yuffie, and so actually whenever like she came into the party, and I'm like, let me give her a chance, I'll put her into the party rotation.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, this girl can hit. I kept her in my party and stuff, and then I liked her personality. I mean, like at Casa de Sol, she showed like, you know, whenever she you walk up to her and she actually has on her bikini, and then like she kind of has this like, am I hot or not, and then like she actually notices that you're kind of like, yeah, like, you know, you know, seeing if you find favor with her, and she's kind of like, yep.
Yeah.
Oh no! And then she runs off.
It's like the Drake moment. This, like,
yeah, she has this like innocent devouter, and then So I mean, I enjoyed having her in the party. She was the comic relief.
Yep.
The Cloud's like drab and seriousness that was needed to be there, and And yeah, so I mean, I like those little like kind of little like the Castle de Sol and then the Golden Saucer because I think it broke up the game. So it was like the first one, kind of the remake, was a little bit like kind of dark, and it was kind of like, just kind of, the train is marching down the track. We got to keep it serious, keep it serious, keep it serious. You know, we're environmental, like kind of like disasters are happening, and we're terrorists. And this one actually added in some fun stuff to do, and so I
It's
enjoyed
fair.
it. Yeah, I mean, I realize sometimes some points they try to put a square into a circle while like, when they were at Castle de Sol and the scientist shows up, I forget his name, and he's right then and there, and you're like, okay, well, we can just take care of this guy right here and now. And
It's like,
they
yeah,
did,
let's do
they
it.
let him, yeah, and they let him go away. And you're like, okay, total RPG style. I'm probably gonna have to fight this guy three times. And so, but that's just the way it goes. But in another character I would like to see was like, of course you mentioned Sid, but then also Vincent. Seeing a little bit more of him, and I wish they would add more time under the sun for him, because I'm like, not knowing a lot about him and seeing him in this game and on the scene, I'm like, the hell is this guy? Is he from Castlevania? I mean, he just kind of like, okay, I'm done here, and then he puts back into his coffin, and I'm like, what's the deal? What is the background on this guy?
Again, like
I
I like when it's
agree.
focused on the new characters, especially like
Yeah.
Yuffie and like Red. I don't feel like we got anything from him, right? Because he was
Well,
introduced
I
so
don't
late.
think you've hit the point yet.
Yeah, you're not there
But
Yeah,
no, no, you get a
you
lot
have
of his
to get there.
background. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm excited to see that. It's just like some of the stuff. I'm like, okay, man. Like I know Barrett Steele. I like the story that we're on with him, but it's like
Did you
apocalypse is a
Joe,
coming.
did you do the dying fight yet?
Describe the fight for me, please.
I'll take that as a
Awfully
no.
close.
Yeah,
Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
It's
no.
real good, Joe.
Okay,
It's real good.
it's awesome.
He'll
That's
get
definitely
there.
one of my favorites for sure. The whole Barrett arc and I don't think it really has changed much since the original game, right? It's pretty much the same thing, but the way that they played it out and showed his depth, right? He's not just this, very serious guy who's all business, but he's got like a really strong backstory. And I think that's something that this game does really, really well is that almost every one of these characters has such a range, right? They can be silly in one moment, they can be super serious, there's tragedy, there's hope. And it's just it comes out in so many of the interactions that you have. And I love that Barrett scene with Dine and just how the guy went crazy, right? I mean he's nuts. But you can see it in his face and the pain and the suffering and I thought that was super powerful. But on the other hand, right, we were talking about how things were so funny. I love the chicken side quest in Gungaga
Oh God.
with the with the lady who wants you to find her chicken and you're like, oh yeah, I'm no big deal, I'll get your chicken, no big deal. And you bring her back and it's like, oh, thank you so much, let me make you some of my famous grilled chicken. I'm like, oh God. So yeah, man, it hits so many different notes. And
Absolutely.
yeah, it's so cool.
Thanks,
Yeah,
Andrew.
I agree that with all of you, I think Kate Sith's ritual is it was really hard for me as well. It was I wasn't expecting that. I felt so bad for him. I also found it was very ironic that Cloud trusted him when he trusts no one. He literally tried to kill Tifa, one of his best friends, because
Yeah, you're
he
right.
didn't trust
You're right.
she was hurt. So it's ironic to me. But I really Red's arc in Cosmic Canyon is fantastic to me. It's a moment that I felt like they went so deep with his story. I really felt for him. I love that all characters kind of dealt with some kind of loss during the game. And Red is worse than everybody because he lost his freedom, he lost his family, he lost his people, he lost everything, even his name. But that's the reason. And he's one of the best characters to play with. I agree that Kate is not the best to play solo, and to me the worst part of the game is the part that you actually have to fight just with him, because that was horrible. But as a support character, he's fine. Honestly, fighting with Red, fighting with Yuffie, it's fantastic. Actually, I prefer fighting with both of them than Tifa and Aerith most of the game. But I really love how they got in depth with all the main characters, and even with Vincent and Sid, and I hope we see more of them in the third game. I love that Vincent is just there. We go to places and he's there. He's always there. He arrives first every time. I love that. But I honestly hope to play with him in the third game. I love playing with him in the first one, in the original one. I didn't really like Yuffie in the original game. I actually hated how we got her because she was an optional character and it was just a nightmare to get her. And Vincent wasn't that easy as well, but still, it was a cool, super cool character, like a vampire-like character. And I love that we fight his limit break on the Shinra Mansion. But yeah, I think the way that they expanded on all characters made me care for all of them. It's great. I wasn't expecting that. It's really hard to do that when you have eight characters to deal with. And they did such a good job. Obviously, remake helped because they didn't really need to expand that much on Tifa and on Aerith and Barrett. But they still did, even considering that. I hope that in the next game they do it further. But obviously, they don't have Aerith to deal with, or at least not the original Aerith to deal with. But I think that what they did with the game, and probably one of the reasons the game was so large, was that they actually were hell-bent on expanding on these character stories.
Yeah, and to a couple of points you brought up, because Joe, you don't care about spoilers, but having Nanaki talk like a kid when he sees Guggenhagen, because
I'm gonna bring this up.
He is a child. Fantastic. I love that. And how he stays with it until he needs to get a little bit more serious. So then he brings out like the wise voice. I love. Talk about funny moments. I don't know if any of you have finished the Gilgamesh quest, but Gilgamesh is a huge highlight for me. That fight is hella hard, but I think just Gilgamesh being just a total doof is great. And then you brought up everyone going through loss. The scene in the Temple of the Ancients where everyone has to go into their own room and get a vision of it. And then when they all come out, Cloud's just like pissed off that we're wasting time. And he's such a dick to everybody. That was also a favorite moment of mine, just because like that is a side of Cloud that we haven't seen. And he's clearly underneath Sephiroth's like control at that point. It just really took me by surprise. I'm like, whoa, okay, we're at a different side of Cloud now.
Yeah,
Those were
he
great,
became
but yeah.
like he actually. I noticed that. Like, I was like
He
turning
was a
really
villain
against
in that
Cloud. I didn't
moment.
even want to play him because he actually started enjoying killing.
Well, and that's a question whether it actually was Cloud or an imprint
Hmm.
of Sephiroth on him, and I think it has to do a little bit more with that. So in my favorite moment, and I mean I don't cry often, and I think maybe just once or twice in video games, so this might, this was, one of the occasions, and I think Kyle, you just hit it on the head, the Temple of Ancients, the trials. I think Aerith's story just like really kicked me like deep in the gut, a little girl, little Aerith.
Those people are such jerks to her. It's absurd.
Totally.
It's
Totally.
insane.
That's a tough city to live
Totally.
in.
Yeah. Totally. And it just really, really hit me. And I think it's also, I think there's a parallel to my life because, my mom is old and yeah, I don't know how long she still has. And I know that like I'm totally helpless. No, I can't do anything for her. And I think maybe that why it really spoke to me is like, I need to learn to let go. So, and I think that's why it really, really, it really, really hit home. But what was really fascinating for me was the fact that Cloud did not have his own trial. And I really think that is because Cloud was not in touch with himself, or Cloud is not of that, timeline slash planet, or Because of the effect, because as you all have said, Claude wasn't himself. He's already, started killing people. It's for me, it's the Sephiroth imprint, right? And now we can also debate whether Hojo, also experimented on Claude and on Sephiroth both, and whether that which is within Cloud is also an element of Jenova. So this is what the theory says. So in a way they do share, an element of her, which makes Cloud and Sephiroth maybe not that different. But we'll leave it at that, yeah. So Carl, you're laughing, so just checking
I'm just laughing because I keep thinking of more character things in the moment. Full disclosure, I've done everything minus hard mode and the brutal VR challenges in the game.
Cool.
I hated Roche from Remake
Ah,
and in
shame.
Rebirth.
Yeah.
But what they did to him
Mm.
and how tragic it is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh God,
Yeah,
I
bro.
love how it ended up. Also, I want to take a temperature in the room because he's the one character that is constant throughout the game, and I know he's very polarizing. How are we feeling about Chadley, everybody? Because
He's fine.
I kind of like Chadley a lot. And I know he's there's a lot of people online that can't fucking stand him.
I could use a
So,
few less phone calls from him. That's
sure.
about it. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, he talks too much. And
I get that.
Oh, I didn't mind him. I tuned him out sometimes and just kept doing my thing, so it didn't bother me. I'm just like, he means well, so it's just I can choose not to listen to him.
And once I found out there was a female Chadley, I was like, now y'all are going overboard. All right. Pick a lane. We can't have two y'all, dull motherfuckers around here, So, yeah, no, I didn't mind him, though. I didn't mind him.
Well, when the
I
two of them
like
start
that
feuding and he turns the volume down on the girl.
Ignore my
Yeah, I
sister.
like how he's clueless. Yeah, because he complains that she talks too much, but he also, every time I want to buy material from him, he talks for like a straight minute, and I just wanted to buy something.
It's so meta. I love it so much. And shout out to the proto relics too, bringing in like other characters. I think the one that I sent out a tweet and people were like, oh, where was that scene about? It's the Cosmo Canyon proto relic quest, I think, or maybe just a regular side mission where it's Barret and Tifa actually mourning the Avalanche members
Oh, that
who
was
they
so touching.
lost.
Totally with you.
That was the first
Yep.
moment I was weeping, because
Yeah.
it was so
Yeah.
beautiful. The
Yeah.
flashback to the bar where they're all like just drinking and hanging out. Oh my God, I'm getting weepy just thinking about it. Like it's such a beautiful moment, and I w wish that was maybe not a side content thing, and that
True.
was something that everyone got to see because it is so beautiful. But then like having them throw in these little references to the OG game, like Kid G being like the Cactar spokesperson, even though that is my least favorite minigame in the whole game. That thing was so frustrating. But they weren't afraid to embrace the weirdness of the OG game
Yeah.
and rationalize it a whole lot in this one, even though we didn't get the Triceratops tank enemy in this one, which I'm a little bummed about.
Before I move on, I just want to have a couple quick shout outs. Is Dio hasn't been mentioned. So absurd, so hilarious.
Oh,
Love
yeah.
his intro scene in particular was I thought it was amazing. And then completely unrelated, but maybe a little bit related to what Kyle had said about the relationships kind of with the OG characters. I loved Tifa and Aerith's relationship in this game. And seeing it develop, it was fantastic. They did
It's
a really
true. Very, very intimate, no, at the end, no? So yeah, totally with you.
When they're buddy buddy and the soldiers are in the march,
Yeah,
the
but it's
parade,
Oh,
beautiful.
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because it's very much everyone's like, oh, you got to choose one to be. Shout out to the Shinra upper middle manager, by the way. His side quest is great. I am recording, so we're good to go.
Today's world. So perhaps if you're looking at the reality of today, what kind of hit home with what you experience within the game?
I can start. I mean, no, I think these are almost two sides of the same coin. I think that two, beyond environmentalism, of course, two themes that are apparent in this game are this concept of legacy, but also destiny. So, I mean, we see kind of like the legacy of several characters and their story, you know, the legacy of Barrett's actions throughout his kind of storyline and his backstory, the legacy of Red and his father and parentage and in the Cosmo Canyon chapter. I think that those are quite prominent. And then the destiny one as well is like, ultimately, no matter what changes we have, we're still kind of seem to be all driving towards the same final end point, or at least, you know, in some regards, we can only change things so much. Ultimately, you know, Aerith still dies in the main timeline, even though we kind of, there were some attempts to kind of maybe not have that happen. So those are a couple anyways, legacy and destiny.
Nice one, Marcus. Thanks. Gabe.
Yeah, to me, there's a media manipulation component to it. I mean, the Wutai War wasn't really that prominent in the original game. And in this one, you can see Rufus trying to manipulate everybody to try to get into war. And also, they're trying to... I mean, everybody knows Avalanche. And I think it's funny that it doesn't work with Avalanche. Everybody, every place the party goes, it's like, oh, you're Avalanche, right? Cool. How can we help? It's essentially like that. But you can see that everybody knows them, and it's such a... because they're trying to manipulate everybody into saying that Avalanche is responsible for everything. And I really think that's something that in today's world is really important to understand how people can perceive the information that's being shared with them. We have like this super powerful company that controls media, controls information. And it's interesting to see that not only they're trying to do that, but failing to do that because people actually understand that they're actually the bad ones. They don't care about what media is saying, what people are saying about these people.
Nice one, Gabe. Two L's.
Loss is a big one. Each character obviously going through tremendous loss in their lives. But also just feeling lost yourself, like especially with like Cloud not understanding exactly what his purpose is still fully, and being just confused as to what's going on. I think the game did a really great job of portraying that feeling of not unsureness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are the main ones that I came across while playing.
Nice one. Nice one.
Not just loss, like the impact of loss, how that shapes who you are.
You are totally. Yeah.
Because the Red seeing his father scene in this one was so well done, and that definitely hit that on the head, and like the Gee storyline as well, of just like they want to go and they can't, but like they're stuck, and try to help them get overcome their thing too is very well done.
Yeah, I mean, so, I'll mention the Cloud's journey, right? His, I think it's a good exposition just on mental health in general, right? You know, imposter syndrome and being unsure and not trusting your friends or the people that are close to you because of your own things that you're dealing with. I think it's out there in the world today. And a lot of us deal with it. And, seeing that play out, obviously in a game, a fictional story and whatnot, but it's a good exposition for a lot of us who are dealing with those sorts of things.
Very true, John. Dustin, does anything come to mind to you?
Is it Dustin?
Yeah, sorry.
Esten.
Dustin. Esten. Solo.
Solo.
It's Esten.
Oh, did I say? Okay, there we go. Esten.
And then, no, sorry. No, I get, trust me, in real life, I get all kinds of different names as long as there's some kind of vowels in there.
Sorry, mate. There we go.
No worries. It's a long list. The for me, it actually, at first I thought maybe at the start it was going to try and do a little bit of the military scene. I thought maybe, oh, they're going to try fascism in this. But no, they didn't. When I saw the island scene, and then I saw the beach scene, and then I saw the golden saucer, I'm like, okay, they're not doing that. And then what kind of took away from it was actually a little bit of the Vin Diesel take. I'm like, okay, that's definitely, friends becoming family. Because I think in the first one, they're actually much more just trying to get things done. We're working, we're getting along to move along, because we're working toward a common goal. But I think in this one, by showing their various background stories, it showed that, they're definitely on some level a lot of broken people in here. And they don't have moms, dads, brothers, and sisters, but they have each other. And so taken as a cohesive mix and put together, they become lean on each other from their own past experiences and become a very solid family unit. And they're like, okay, we've become friends that are now family. And so that's a driving home that message that I took from it is actually how, although you might not have your blood family, you can have friends that over time as a group become just as tight and become that type of family.
Very nice. Very nice. For me, it probably has to do, if we just look at the world picture, right? And I mean, I lived many years in South Africa and obviously South America. But let me stay with Africa for a while. It's kind of that Shinra syndrome. Shinra looking for, the promised land and wanting to use the promised land for, their own kind of goals. And it's like the battle that we still have today for resources, for people trying to use it kind of just for their own good and not letting kind of the world have part of it, but rather cornering off the market for themselves so that they can maximize, whatever profit comes from it. And so unfortunately Africa is filled, because Africa is a continent filled with resources, gold, diamond, lots of minerals, right? We take a company like the fruit, right? What I'm talking about, right? They just basically grab something that I think could be much more beneficial if we break it down regionally to improve the lives of the region around where those resources are. But rather something for themselves, and we get something like child labor, slave labor, things like that. So this is kind of what Shinra represents. It's almost trying to get the promised land without actually being conscientious about it, what they're doing to the planet. And it's like, okay, well, it's just because we will do it because we can. And it's, it's going to be a great benefit for us. And for me, that is so short-sighted. But that's unfortunately how the world works. So it goes beyond environmentalism, but it really goes into kind of trends. You know? So it goes into colonialism almost, into specific aspects of history, which is still happening today, whether we speak of oil or whether we speak of anything else. It's like a very small group of people take advantage of a resource, they protect it. And then they misuse it, right, for their own gain. So, yeah, so that still kind of resonates today. So thank you for that. Yeah. Very good. Does anyone else want to say something? Otherwise, we'll just move on.
You have anything, Colin? I don't know if we've heard.
Yeah, I don't know if I could really add anything else to what you guys have said. I think you guys have all pretty much hit the nail on the head by now. I guess one small thing I would just kind of toss in there is just kind of like the propaganda war machine and playing into the war with Wutai and stuff. I know Decime touched on it a little bit already as well. But like this random guy from Final Fantasy VII, the first soldier, shows up and he's integral in this. By the way, did you know you had to play the first soldier for this game? It's required reading.
Good old Glenn Ludbrock.
But just seeing that whole thing spin up, trying to kickstart the war with Wutai and stuff in order to further Rufus Shinra's plans with finding the Promised Land. But one thing on that though is like, you know, the Prime Minister that they kept mentioning, his name I think is an anagram for Rufus. I can't recall his name off the top of my head, but I remember somebody in a YouTube video or something pointing out that
Interesting.
the Prime Minister's name is an anagram for Rufus Shinra.
Oh, wow.
And that's why he didn't show up on that press meeting.
Oh.
Because he was Rufus all along.
Interesting.
I definitely think it's just Sephiroth messing with Rufus as well.
It could be also,
Yeah, it could be.
yeah.
Because I think Glenn is another one of the clones. So Sephiroth's hopping back and forth, and he's just there to kind of mess with everybody on
Yeah,
every
to spur
level.
things along.
Very good. Let's quickly go to the next question. So, how did the shift to an open world structure affect your experience with the game? So, compared to, I think, Remake. Did the explorable regions and side quests add to the immersion or create pacing issues?
See, this is where I wish Joe was still
Yeah.
here. I adored it. I love this world so much. I love the OG so much. I love Remake. The fact that we get to it gives me goosebumps just thinking of when you open the doors and you just see the grasslands there and you just go wherever. It's to experience this world in such a great detail, I think is amazing. Are there too many things to do? Absolutely. Did I enjoy them all? No, there's some I didn't, but I still did them because I loved the characters and the interactions and hopping back and forth is great. I think the proto relics are the strongest ones, by far. And I mean, any chance we get to play Queen's Blood, I'm going to play Queen's Blood. So for me personally, I love checking off all the boxes and making sure I hit all the optional objectives in every creature fight and all that stuff. I loved every second, but I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. And it did. I can see why some people are like, yeah, no, it's a lot of padding going on. But again, I loved every second.
I want to say that I don't think it I think it added to the immersion and created pacing issues. So it did a little bit of both of them. So I think that I do appreciate that, you know, a lot of this stuff. I know that Colin has been a big advocate for this in the past, so I'll let you kind of maybe tail in on this. Is like, I felt like the game was too big. Colin's argument, which I'm sure he'll get into, is that you don't there's lots of stuff you just don't have to do. You don't have to do it all, which I can appreciate. I didn't do it all. I kind of got to about the gold saucer, and then it was like I pretty much mainlined it from there. But I did feel like I missed some stuff because of that. But because it felt like I wanted to get it done. I didn't want to miss some of the kind of important story beats, which some of the stuff that has come up in today's discussion, I didn't see. So I feel like I missed out on that. Had it not been quite as much, it would have been okay. But I was still able to get through the whole story and kind of like plow through and just do my main storyline. So I'm kind of two minds of this. It felt a little big for me, but I can appreciate people having that extra content for the people that want it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the open world. My complaint on the remake one was that the world was not open enough, and I thought it was too linear. I took the side quests and all that as far as like, you know, do what you want to do and what you don't want to do, don't do it, and just get back on the main quest. I enjoyed that they gave so many travel nodes. I thoroughly enjoyed running into all the little fat chocobos and helping them like erect the bus stops. It gave me pleasure in that. I enjoyed going and doing all the lore. I enjoyed reading about the regions and history and like, oh, this is how it was. and this is now where it is, and this is the reason why it became that way. So I cherry picked what I did. Some of the quirky stuff I enjoyed, like when you got to become like a frog. I mean, I enjoyed running into that and stuff like that. So I mean, it was I enjoyed that it gave you variety, and you can go as deep as you wanted to go, or you can just like do, you know, flyby and keep it as skimmed. But I like that it gave you that opportunity to do it, and variety as far as an environment. They were changing. About the only time I kind of got to a point where I was just like, okay, you know, I don't appreciate this area, was that Mushroom Kingdom area, because I'm like, this is just so confusing. Which way is up? How do I get here? How do I get there? You know, my God almighty, why can a chocobo just not fly? You know, I mean, yeah. Come on.
Forever known as Mushroom Kingdom from here on forward.
Also, if you didn't pet every single one of those chocobo chicks, I'm reporting you to the authorities, by the way.
Oh my God.
Funny.
I did. Actually, I thought there was going to be like a trophy, so I petted every single one of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I did. I made everyone skip with joy and click their heels together like a little lucky charm.
Funny. I did double check the trophy list on that one, so good call, yeah. Solo. Very good. Gabe.
I think one thing that I loved is that the fact that every region is so different, so it didn't feel like you were always doing the same thing. That being said, I hate Cosmo Canyon because it's so vertical, and I had some places that I had no idea how to get there. So that's one thing that I didn't like, because if I see something on a map, I need to know how to get there. And I feel like the map, because the map was super horizontal in just one level, you didn't really know how high something was. So that was one thing that could use some improvement. But other than that, I think it's really great that they did that. And like everybody's saying, everything is optional. So it's optional in a real way, because sometimes side quests are optional, but if you don't do them, then you're going to be underleveled when you get to the boss. So you're going to need some grinding. So it doesn't happen at all in this game. Personally, I finish every side quest before finishing the game, except for the Ultimate Party Animal one, because that one is super long and comes up super late in the game. Then I did that one later. But I think they are good. I mean, when comparing to Final Fantasy 16, for example, that also had an open world, a semi-open world approach, I feel the side quests are way better. In 16, you see, like, there are some gems in there, but lots of these side quests are super dull. And in Rebirth, that doesn't happen. Most of them have some character-related story, and it improves the relationship with some character. That's also something super interesting. I love the party level system that they implemented to kind of make you do side stuff more. This is something that I really enjoyed. I feel like I agree with people that say that it improves the immersion and also create pacing issues, because I mean, I'm a completionist, so if I see some side quests to do, I'm gonna do it. But I do understand that this is kind of it creates its own pacing issues because of that. But I also know that most people aren't like that. Most people are just going to mainline the story, ignore the side content, and just go through it. So I understand people thinking that it will create pacing issues, but also I feel like it's not what most people are going to do. So that's one of the reasons I believe that it's a good idea. And also, fast travel in this game is amazing. I really enjoyed how quick you can get from one region to another. There are several fast travel places to go. I wouldn't enjoy that as much if I had to go to a main city and then just go take my chocobo and go to that place. So fast travel helps a lot with open world immersion.
Yep, and then also fast traveling between the regions, right? Once you have it open, which is also
yeah, that's nice.
Good. Yeah, so totally. John, let's hear from you.
Yeah, no, I think very much echo the same comments here. Everything is there. It's optional. But I do think if you're not at least doing the side quests, you're missing out. a big portion of the game with a lot of the character development and the stories that come along with that. I don't need to go and scan 47 live stream fountains or whatever. That's fine. It's there. I think it is a nice payoff. The little Chadley scene that you get at the end of everything. I think that's pretty cool for the folks that did do it. It gives it some value, but you have to invest a lot of time in jumping around that map to get to that point. So I do think if you're trying to 100% each of the regions before you move on, it could really bog you down. And had I started this again, I probably would have taken a different approach earlier in the game and done less of that extra stuff. That being said, this is still probably my favorite game I've played this year. Everything about it was so great. And I really did like the open world element of it because you can do things at your own pace. And if you are hitting pacing issues, then it's probably self-inflicted.
On that note of 100%ing everything before you move on, I did do that. And then when it forces you to move on without 100%ing,
I'm like,
annoyed the crap out of me.
Yes, same. Yes.
Very good. Colin.
Corral. Well, I will be the first person in line whenever somebody is talking about open world fatigue. I mean, I mention it all the time. It's like Horizon Forbidden West was a very big eye opener for me where it was too much. That was pretty overwhelming. I still haven't gone back and finished that game. That was when I decided it's like, all right, maybe I'm a little bit burned out on these games. That being said, that didn't stop me from doing every little thing I could in this game, because I don't know what it was about Rebirth. I was just so in it from the start with this game. It was like I was doing, we're talking about 100%ing every area before moving on and stuff. I was doing that 1, 2, 3, 4 every single time. I loved being in this world. I loved the realization of like what the original game was, and then they took that and just blew it up. And they actually succeeded in making just like a 1-to-1 scale of the original world in this game and just filling it with stuff to do. They just succeeded on that in every regard. It just blew my mind. One of my favorite things to do was in Junon, which was probably my favorite area in the entire game, just because like I loved positioning my party in various areas throughout that region in relation to the canon, and then just spending way too much time in photo mode trying to get the perfect shot in relation to that canon. Because like if you remember in the original game, your player character on the world map was bigger than the Junon canon on the world map, so to finally see everything in that that proper scale was so cool. But to kind of touch on what Marcus was alluding to before, is I kind of a lot of the sentiment that you'll see online from a lot of people, especially scrolling through Twitter and stuff, when they're talking about the games, like there's just too much side content. It's just so much, and like it's optional content though. Like a lot of people you will see, they'll be like, well, it's all this bloat stuff. It's like I disagree with the assertion that optional content could ever be bloat. It is optional. It's something that's there if you want to do it. Otherwise, you can just pretend it's not there and move on with your day. As someone that has been playing pretty much exclusively Final Fantasy XIV since finishing Rebirth, I know all too well the amount of optional content available to me in this game that I've just been mainlining the story, and it's been a perfectly good experience for me over these past couple months playing that game and stuff. So it's like, it really comes down to more on a player-to-player basis of just knowing when to pick and choose how much of it you're going to take. And if you've had your fill, just it's okay. You don't have to feel like you have to force it down if it's getting too much for you.
Yeah, I would say, I like the point that was made earlier about like, yeah, the side quests, or like they made them optional, and you can tell they made them optional because like you don't have to do them. And if you don't do them, you don't fall behind and you're not under level going into, okay, in the next zone, you got to be level 20 to 30. And if you didn't do all these side quests, or at least half of them back in the other zone, you're going to this next level, you know, next zone. And oh, buddy, you got a headache coming on your hands. And, or if you didn't do, let's say in like Final Fantasy 16, if you didn't do that one side quest, oh man, you missed out. You didn't get that mount. You could have had a chocobo, and it was that one side quest you could have done and got your mount to run around with. And so I like the fact that they made them to where they all are optional. And I'm playing a lot of open world games, being an RPG guy. My pacing issue has always been like what you were talking about, like taking photos, and like I get bogged down and doing like I want to do a photo here, I want to do a photo there, I want to do a photo here, and I have to like in Horizon and stuff like that, I actually have to stop myself and be like, okay, stop taking so many damn photos, just start playing the game. And so that's what will actually drag me down.
Yeah, this
that
is the
doesn't
game
say
that.
all.
Sorry.
Also,
Go,
like
Colin.
none of the actual like story of Final Fantasy VII is locked behind any of those side quests. Like that is all just extra exposition, extra character moments and stuff to fill out their stories a little bit. But like, you can get the entirety of the story of Final Fantasy VII without stepping into those side quests at all, and I think that's pretty well designed on their end.
I it just something just occurred to me that is probably worth bringing up here. I was on a mission, kind of like, I don't know, halfway through the game, kind of from that gold saucer point on, the first gold saucer point on, that I wanted to just kind of mainline the game and get through the main story. And I had intention of going back and doing some of the proto-relic quests that I'd missed, some of the green side quests that I had missed, and found out afterwards that you can't do that, right? You can't just kind of like once you finish the main story, just have access to the open world and kind of. Am I wrong in that? I felt like I had to restart the game, and I was like, well, okay, I guess I missed that. I feel like if I'm correct in that, that's not a very good design choice. You should have been able to have the option to just go back to the point of no return and have access to everything. Am I wrong in this?
Yeah, no, I think you can. Yeah,
They
I
might
think
be
you
chapter
should.
specific.
Yeah,
Like you have to
chapter
go back to a
specific.
specific chapter where those quests unlock.
Yeah, if you the start of chapter 13, if you
13,
select from
yeah.
there, you can do everything.
Yeah,
Okay.
but
Did I
it's
have to have a save though, or could I just like because I didn't, I wasn't, I was only using one save file.
if
But
you
you
beat the
can
game, you
you
should
can
have chapter
after
select. Yeah,
yeah
and you'd be able
after
to get.
after you finish. You have chapter selection and can select. The only thing that I actually agree with you, they don't tell you which chapter you need to select to do the all kind of stuff. You actually need to know that that was the point where you have everything because after you get access to all the pro relics, but you don't have Caed Sith. So if you want to get the trophy for upgrades, weapons and everything, you actually have to return to another chapter where Caed Sith is there. But yeah, in chapter 13 you can do it, but they don't tell you. You actually need to, or whether to know it beforehand or to look it up.
On
Does
that
this all
note,
your stuff carry over, like in 16? Like if you play New Game Plus, like all your leveling carries over and
you
all
can
that other stuff?
select, you can
Yep.
do,
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
and on that
Yeah, there's
point,
no.
yeah, I was just gonna say, like, my least favorite thing about this game is the wording of some of these choices.
Oh,
Of like retry from last battle, retry from last checkpoint, and then you choose one and it brings you way further back. Or when it comes to
yeah.
chapter select, you get to choose
Goes unwisely.
it's like keep all quest data, reset all quest data, and then there's I think another option, and it doesn't
Yeah.
really explain which one is the
What it is.
correct one.
And you're sitting there and you're Googling on Reddit or something like, which one do I want
Exactly.
to choose?
That is a huge bummer because there are many
So
times I click the wrong thing.
I died at the end of the final boss fight and picked the wrong option on accident.
Oh, so you went all the way back?
All the way back to the start of that fight.
Oh, that's funny.
It was awful.
It's okay, such a
Although it
short
was a
fight.
good boss fight, yeah. So yeah.
But the last boss fight, that was the only time when we fought Sephiroth. That was the only time that the whole game actually used the Phoenix Down was actually to bring up. I think I had to bring up like Aerith, like because I let her get wailed on too much. I had to bring her up, and that was the only time I used one of the Phoenix Downs. And I've been hoarding them, hoarding them, hoarding them, hoarding them. And I was like, oh no,
Revival
that's funny.
materia was my friend.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. There we
Something
go.
similar happened to me just real quick on the final boss fight. So on my hard playthrough, couldn't beat the last Sephiroth part of the fight. So I walked away one night and I'm like, you know what? I'll just put my PS5 to sleep. I'll come back tomorrow. I'll get it. No big deal. I come back from work after that day, and it was the day that they pushed the update to adjust the wording in some of those, the continue screens, and it forced a restart of my game, and I had to redo the whole thing again.
Oh, no.
I was committed at that point, but I was like, oh, of course.
I might grab your hair a moment.
They fixed a problem and created a new one for you.
That's it. Yeah, the personal problem, at least. So.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
So I'm trying to just to answer that question with regards to pacing issues. I'm actually trying to approach this game because the nature of the characters, you know, the what they mean to you, and how they tell the story and how they're interlinked. You know, I want these stories to accompany me until we get part three. And I really hope that we only get a part three and not then, I mean, obviously we won't, but it would be nice, right? Where we have four different worlds, so we still maybe have, you know, four different games to come, right? I'm kidding. But it would be nice. I can just imagine, Kyle, let's bring the story to an end.
Don't joke about that. Don't put that out there.
Yeah, the best stories anyway. Are told in three acts.
Totally. So what I'm thinking really is here is I mainlined, obviously, from... So I've did all the side quests and everything complete until the end of Chapter 9. And then I realized, okay, if I want to be prepared for our session here today, I need to mainline it. So and so I mainline chapter 10, 11, and 12, 13, 14. And I'm kind of thinking whether this game isn't inviting me to enjoy games differently. So a little bit like the Final Fantasy 14 element to kind of say, okay, well, there is so much stuff to do. I don't need to do everything to kind of get this game behind me. I want to still, you know, have this game being very present whenever we get part three. Maybe it's called Homecoming, who knows, right? And this is a good way. There's enough content there for the next 3 years. And I mean, Carl, if I just go back to you, you made a comment on one of the podcast show to say, you know, you have, I don't know, 8 gigs of photographs, right, about about this game. And I kind of thinking, you know, and they're really introducing the photo element here with regards to the missions that you need to do. Wouldn't it be great to kind of go through this game and make sure that this game remains present for the next 3 years? You know, you've completed the main mission, but you can still be in contact with the characters, with their story. And this game still has a lifespan of, you know, of a specific time. So that the story is still fresh before you start the next one. And I'm going to try and live up to this. I'm not sure how I'll do it yet, but I think that there are a lot of tools there to try and experience this game differently and not for it to be a game that I just tick off an Excel table to say, okay, done, platted, gone. So I want to see whether that's possible, because I think those characters, compared to all other games, these characters are incredibly dear to me. And I would love them to be still, you know, part of my journey, right? As I grow older and as I mature, for them to be present and resonate, you know, with specific aspects within me. So I'm not sure how the rest of you feel. So whether you feel like, okay, I'm glad once it's done, or whether you want to, you know, want this game to be part of your gaming journey for the next 3 years.
To that point, I'm very happy that it took me a few months to beat it, and I took my time with it. At first, I was upset with myself because it's my most anticipated game for a long time, and that I didn't get it done within a week. I was like, oh man, I'm so far behind. Am I really a true mega fan of this game? But the fact that I would take breaks and come back to it, it helped with my enjoyment a whole lot, and I remember more of the, what was my final hour count, like 125 hours before hard mode. I do think taking your time with this one is great, because there's a lot. Not just content-wise, just like story moments, plot points, and characters, and I think taking your time with this one is probably the way to go.
You know, I kind of think
I played the game. I'm not gonna get the plat on it, but I mean, I played the game and like I played it at like, you know, pace where like I was much like you know, Marcus, I got to the golden saucer, and then after that, I stopped trying to do any side quests and I just like mainlined it all the way through because I was like, you know, I'm enjoying this, but I want to see how this all kind of ends. You know, I'm kind of getting. I still picked up the lore here and there, but you know, I definitely that was the only thing I did for a side quest, and not because I wanted to just I got tired of it, but you know, I just wanted to like I was interested in it and wanted to see how it all ended because I loved the game and I was really excited about it coming out and I was eager as a page turner. You know, and I'm definitely not, like I said, I'm not going to plat it. If I was, I would take a break because I know to try and plat this game, time I got done playing it to go into trying to plat it, I know it would turn me against the game. Like, for example, like I'm a big fan of Horizon Forbidden, that whole entire series. And even when like Horizon Forbidden West came out, I mean, I chewed through it and that was like, I mainlined that game, but then I did not go back and get the platinum on it until around probably around 4 or 5 months later, just because I just wanted to give myself a break. Cause I knew if I did it like right time I finished that game that I would kind of just get burned out and turn against it. And so.
Gotcha. Thanks. Let's move on to the next question. So what are your thoughts on the variety and use of the mini games in Rebirth? So let's talk mini games for a sec or two or three.
I think the discussion should begin and maybe not end, but at least begin with Queen's Blood. Queen's Blood is fantastic. It's so much fun. I don't typically like card games in as mini games, and I was all in on Queen's Blood.
I'll be asked off this panel then because my time with it, I played it just like Quint in The Witcher. I played just enough to do what I had to do to get by, and I'm like, thank you, and I will see you later on, hopefully never in life. I was not feeling it.
Okay, interesting.
It took me a little while to warm up to it, actually. Like, it was probably the first, like, 3 or 4 hours after they introduced it, like, the first couple chunks of opponents that you got, I wasn't quite sure how I felt about it. And then after it started to open up a little bit more, you got introduced to different deck archetypes and stuff. And then it was just like, from there, I was like, I found a deck that I liked. And I was like, okay, this is great. And every opportunity I took to play it, I played it. I think it's so cool that the amount of variety in deck design in the game is a huge plus, especially going from like Triple Triad or Tetramaster, where they're pretty simple deck construction wise. Basically, you just put all the best cards in your deck and that's your deck sort of thing. This one, there's a lot more strategy and deck building involved with it, which I enjoyed a lot.
I actually really, really loved the strategy version of it. Like, not against an actual other opponent. Like, they put cards on the board and you have to fill in the puzzle to win the rounds. Cool. I enjoyed those a whole lot. Queen's Blood's great. I think it's one of the best card games. I prefer Triple Triad and Tetra a little bit more. But I think the payoff to... Again, it's a story payoff, but I think the payoff in Queen's Blood is pretty cool.
I really like the presentation of Queen's Blood. The way that they zoom down onto the board. And the first time that it comes up, draw blood, I was like, oh, man, I'm in. Like, sign, sealed, delivered. That's it. I do like the different options that it gave you in how to craft your deck. But I will say that probably about halfway through the game, I found a bunch of cards that I liked. And I just stuck with those, unless it was some of the challenges, right, where they give you the different ones that you have to kind of work with. I did kind of just find the cards I liked and stuck with those and was able to kind of brute force the ending few matches there with what I liked.
Gabe.
Yeah, I love Queen's Blood. I'm a big fan of card games. I'm even like tabletop ones. I'm a huge Magic the Gathering fan. I loved Queen's Blood with all my heart. And I really love the fact that you could build different archetypes. You could There are so many cards that you could pick from. I did love enjoy the puzzles as well. I feel good that they picked this one to be the main mini game, because I think that it is the best polished game and mini game in this game. That being said, there are some mini games that I don't particularly feel good about. I hate Cactuar Crush like with all my heart, and honestly, I don't really like. This is one thing that I don't like about this game. It's about again, it's about speaking to the completionist in me. It's the fact that to plat this game, you actually need to finish all mini games. I recently platted Infinite Wealth, and it's a different way, different approach to plat. You don't really need to go 100% on everything. Yeah, there are different ways for you to finish that game. In this one, you actually need to go and do everything. And sometimes you're not good at something, right? Like for example, the Musclehead Coliseum is too long to me. I think we already have the VR battles. You don't really need another version of that. And that one in particular, I felt it was really repetitive because the final battles are just the same opponents, the same enemies in a different variations, different setups, and they were the worst monsters to fight in the whole game. Like I hated fighting Great Marlboros. I hate turning into a toad. So it's
Those big
those
fucking
things I think I
birds.
felt it was a
Oh, the zoo calls, right? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not only just every mini game, it's every mini game on hard mode
Yes.
too for the
That's
plat.
that.
So it's just like, come
Yeah, so
on.
that's why I was like, yeah, no plat for me. They're making it. This is a lot of chore work right here.
Yeah. And other than that, I really enjoyed it. I just felt like it made me hate a couple of these games, and it felt a little bit of a chore. I didn't. I like the variation, and I like the fact that they put some thought into some of these games. Like the piano game is, honestly, I would play that all day.
But that was cool.
If they,
I like the piano
yeah,
game.
they,
That was cool.
if they released new songs, I would love that. I think it was well built. I think it's well thought. But others, it's just, eh. That's the thing. It's other than that, I think it's well planned.
I'm very happy you didn't have to S rank every piano song to get
Oh
the
my God.
associated
Tragedy.
thing. That's great. I loved a majority of them. The Cactuar one gave me a massive headache, especially the hard versions of them. Specifically because they were like, you have to use a Yuffie and Aerith. And I couldn't try my hand on, like, I would just, if I had the choice, just use Barret and just sit there and just pop all the Cactuars if I could. I think the Chocobo gliding one is an also terrible one. I hated that one
Yeah,
with a that was probably
passion,
my
that
least
one.
favorite.
Yeah.
And Fort Condor was good until hard mode. And
That was tricky.
those hard ones, like, I legit just had to look up a guide and, like, tell me
Like,
where
tell
to place them, which units to use, because
me.
became overwhelming. Even though it was, like, so freaking cool to have the OG models of FF7 in Rebirth and Fort
School.
Condor mode. I agree. I like the variety of them a whole lot. I love the majority of them. It definitely adds to the world and our nostalgia for these moments brought up into the modern thing. I think the gold saucer ones are great outside of the Musclehead Coliseum, because I agree. Just the here's a battle with the same two enemies, except they're on the other side of the arena, or like it just felt like, okay, what are we doing here? I think, I don't know if anyone has dabbled with, like, the brutal VR missions. They're way too hard.
They're insane.
They're really bad. That's my only hang up right now. I haven't even started hard mode because I wanted to get all the VR stuff done first. Those suck a whole lot. And I wish, like, the Gilgamesh ones, or maybe just all the VR battles. I kind of wish we weren't in the VR room every single time. I wish,
Oh,
like,
that's a
we
good
would
point.
fight, like, in these awesome landscapes of each region, and kind of, like, because I get tired of the blue blocks and the just like
totally with you.
Stuck in a padded room, like banging my head totally against the wall. You. Yeah, but totally for the most part, I enjoyed a whole lot of them. They brought a lot of like character to the world, but there are some that are just way too hard. And trying to guess the tells on the brawler game. Come on, what are we doing? They're so similar. Oh. Like this and this.
Yeah,
are so
is it a hook or jab? Exactly. Yeah. Come on now. Yeah, that was brutal. My favorite one probably was the Galactic Saviors. It was like a little Star Fox game. Yeah. It wasn't too hard, right? And they gave you had to play it a few times, and it was just easy, and it was just a good time. And
I feel like something out of like a retro arcade.
Yeah,
it's like, do you want a Mario Kart game in your Final Fantasy? Sure, here you go.
Great, yeah. I love Chocobo Racing.
That was fun.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, that was. Oh yeah, yeah. And it was just like I was like, oh, this is drifting like Mario Kart. I got this.
I didn't love the Cosmo Canyon one, the Gears and Gambits. So between that and the Chocobo gliding, those probably were my two least favorite. But they were all good. I think the variety, it wasn't the same. If it was just Queen's Blood like five times over and that was the side stuff, I'd be like, come on. But to have them craft so many different unique games, bring back some from Remake, which was fun, like the box one, but then build off of it and make them all optional, right? You didn't have to do any of this stuff, going back to our last point, but to have the variety, for people who want to do it, I think it's great. I had a great time with it.
How do we feel about the Mog Houses?
They were fine.
They were a little too obtuse.
They were all the same.
Yeah.
It was okay up until about five or six. I think the sixth one really broke me.
Yeah.
And then because for a while it's like you would get them corralled into the thing and then that would be it. You wouldn't have to worry about them anymore. And then as it ramped up, they would start attacking you from within that fence. And there were a couple times in six and seven where I was like, okay, this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I only did it one time and I was like, yeah, that's not my mini game. Yeah, I'm moving on.
Yeah. The one that I really enjoyed obviously was Queen's Blood. And because I was pressed for time, I basically just looked for one deck to beat them all. And and that was like the replacement deck. So I really had fun because I went through the games like butter. So, but you needed to have a good start. I think that was the key. You just start with the right cards.
So if I'm looking at all of y'all's PlayStation profiles right now, I'll see Balatro as like a highly played game right now.
Exactly.
As a case study. I'm like, oh, I see what's going on here. I've got like card fans right now.
And the game that I really bonded with my daughter because she loves rhythm games is the piano mini game. And, you know, I'm kind of too old and, you know, I'm kind of surprised that I'm not as dexterous as I maybe thought I would be. But I think, Carl, I think we both, you know, blame the controller at times. But just looking at my daughter, I mean, she has, I don't know, you know, I think maximum four tries and she has the A score. And that's not something that I could do, right? So I would like sit way longer than that. And it was a good thing that, you know, father and daughter could do. And she loved the music. And I think you just get another appreciation for the wonderful soundtrack that is there. Once you basically look at all the individual notes and how it's all put together. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah, really great time. John, how long did it take you to do all the mini games in hours?
Oh, 30? Gosh. Probably just something like that. Yeah.
30,
yeah,
right?
Roughly. Yeah, because I think the plat, right, I said it was just shy of 160 hours. Gotcha. A good chunk of that was mini games.
Yeah.
Carl.
I did everything on my first playthrough minigame wise, and so 115.
That checks
minus
out.
The brutal and legendary VR stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I could either do the mini games or play Resident Evil 4 two times. Right?
Yeah, basically.
They're not like technically mini games.
Okay.
How did we feel about like the character specific like controllable sections? of like each region we got to, like Tifa with the grappling gun. I hated with the passion the Kate box throwing one. That's made no sense.
He just
sense.
Moves so slow.
Yeah, and yeah. I thought I was aiming it perfectly, and it would never come close or go where I thought it was going.
I like Tifa with the Gatling, the gun you're talking about. Yeah, because I felt like, oh, this is kind of like Bionic Commando. This is kind of fun.
I also enjoyed Red running up the walls and around the walls and stuff. That was fun too.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah,
the Barret and Red combo Crystal Cavern section 2 was super cool. Yeah.
It's nice. That one is nice. The Kate one is, he moves slow. I don't understand the decision of making him run, but if he hits something, then he falls down, and then you take a long. Why are you doing this to me? I mean, this is not a thing. It's so unnecessary.
Is it? Is their thought because he's like a puppet, and he doesn't have like...
probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's just kind of playing into the chaos of him being a cat. So I know the first thing I did when I first got control of Kate Sith was as soon as you got to the mansion, I would just go and just run around, and just because there was so much like collision physics and all the objects inside the mansion there that I was just running around as a cat, just bashing into everything, just because it was so funny to me.
I didn't realize you could roll with him.
Oh, the roll, yeah.
Because I was going around just hitting the boxes like normal, and they're like, no, you could just roll like a little hamster wheel. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Like that one long hallway, right, where there's just a bunch of boxes. I was just trying to manually attack them, and they're like, "No, roll." It's like, ah, got it. This is way easier.
I kind of wonder whether we're having a Stellar Blade moment in Costa del Sol, right? You change costumes, right, or you can change costumes for all your characters, right? Can you keep those costumes on till the end of the game?
After you beat the game, I think you can go back and do it, but you can't.
I played hard mode in bikinis. Just
thank you for bringing up Costa del Sol. The worst minigame by far. Why are you forcing us to drive segways? Like, what? Why? Why? I don't understand.
It's a vacation. Take a segway tour.
It's a vacation.
I was just going around in circles just to get it done. It's stupid.
I mean, it was kind of weird when you did that segue. If you knocked over it and like wrecked so much stuff, like it was like nobody around there was like, "Dude, do you mind?"
Totally.
I'm trying to vent here.
Totally.
One thing that also you get new costumes for other characters as well when you finish the game. You can use the Loveless costume for Red, which is super cool.
That one's a cool one.
Yeah, that one's amazing. But it's kind of weird. I hope they. I didn't know you could finish the hard mode in bikinis. I'm gonna try that one.
Yeah, there you go. if there's one thing I added today, you know, take that away. Yeah.
Does Sephiroth make a comment?
No. All the serious moments hit a little bit different when, you know, you're bikinied up.
That would be amazing if the creators wrote it where if you finished it that way, if Sephiroth, they wrote imagine? It, just that little bit of code that Sephiroth actually makes a comment.
I underestimated you.
Are the
I didn't realize it was that hot in here, girls.
Still in bikinis?
Yeah.
Like the ending cutscene? Or they just go back to their normal clothes again?
No, I'm pretty sure. Oh, like the ending,
the ending cutscene is pre-rendered, so
it's pre-rendered. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But like that would be amazing. In the middle
I seriously underestimated you, Aerith.
But like 90% of the cutscenes in the game are all in-engine cutscenes. So
yeah,
exactly.
It's just like the big ones. I guess they pre-rendered.
Okay, we are slowly but surely approaching the 2-hour mark. Question to you guys, have we missed anything you'd like to talk about that we haven't touched upon yet?
I would like to briefly just highlight some of the sub-villains of the game. Don Corneo showing up again was a nice little surprise. Really enjoyed Elena a whole lot.
Yeah.
I think at some point, isn't she also eating like one of the Kingdom Hearts popsicles at one point in the game? Rude's the bar moment, the bald bar is great.
That was awesome.
Beautiful, beautiful moment. Totally.
I love Professor Gast a whole lot and how just unhinged he is. And the Scarlet boss fight is fucking rad. Just using all the women in a fight. You got Aerith, Tifa, and Yuffie versus Scarlet. And I think one of my favorite visual moments of the whole game, with like all the whispers in the background and Scarlet and the big mech, is awesome. But I also, for fans of the OG game, what do we feel about the way they portrayed the weapons? Because they're not the robot weapons of the OGs. And like, are we going to get that in part three? And I don't know how I feel about these giant whale beings that are part of the live stream yet.
Yeah. Jury's out for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to see what they do with it. But yeah, they all kind of look the same, right? I remember the weapons looking different in the original game.
There are posters, again, like in Tifa's room of like, or around the world of like, here's the ruby weapon. Like, comes to the desert. And you can see the actual OG model. I just wonder if we're not going to get those. Because I'm also trying to think of what else from the OG game that they didn't touch on that's going to be in the third game, if it's going to be 100-hour plus, you know, journey.
I think they're going to get into more detail in the third game. I think it was intentionally vague the way they portrayed it. I hope they do that, because I agree. I think it would be weird not to have that, because it's such an icon. These are such iconic weapons that on your OG game, and I would love for them to get in detail, but I think they didn't do it because Rebirth wasn't about them. They needed to introduce them because they are part of the lore and part of the story, but this was more about Cloud's mental condition and everything and the multiple timelines. I think it's that's the reason, and I hope that's the reason, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, I swear there was somebody made mention of the weapons in Rebirth being more of in like an infant state. Like, they weren't like fully grown yet, because the planet had just begun to kind of form them.
Interesting.
Could be wrong, but I think I remember seeing that somewhere in the game.
That'd be very cool.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm just a little bit fearful with regards to what we will actually see in part three. I know that part two, at least Rebirth, with regards to everything that we experience, with regards to the amount of gameplay that's available with side quests, mini games, because it didn't hit so well. And I know a lot of the stuff is already kind of, you know, pre-rendered, done. I kind of fear that out of cost aspects, that it might not be as intense and fat or bloated. In the third one, so I
won't
think
be as robust.
Robust, that's a nice one. Yes, that we might actually get a slim version of maybe what they originally thought about. That's a fear that I have. Yeah, so let's wait and see. So something, a small little voice inside me says, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, they're corporate. It didn't hit the way that they wanted to. And they're not going to invest tons of resources. So I think that we'll have the dream, the original plan, and then we'll have reality. So that's a little fear that I have within me. I'm not sure how the rest of you feel about it.
Now, I can see maybe if they kind of got to a point by the time the third one comes around that they're ready to move on to another project. So they're like, let's just wrap this up. And so it seems like, the third one feels rushed compared to the second one.
A little bit like Lost, the TV series, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea, though, of like the middle chapter being like the big chunky part of the trilogy, though. So if like they did just kind of more mainline it for the third part, I don't think I'd be too upset with it.
Yeah,
I think the third one's going to be to look a lot more like Remake than Rebirth in terms of length and stuff you have to do.
Probably.
Yeah,
20-hour game. Yeah.
Yeah, if they're going to invest somewhere, it's going to be here, right? I don't think they're going to pull many resources off of this project when they have so many other kind of rods in the fire, right? I think they want to. They're known for Final Fantasy, right, as one of their big pillars. So I'd be more concerned about some smaller projects that they'd pull resources from. I'm less concerned about a third trilogy here. But who knows? I'm just some guy in a basement.
Will it be multi-platform?
No.
I don't think so.
I mean, we're going to get to play it on PlayStation, so it's fine.
I will play it on PlayStation. But I think it could be multi-platform or... The window of it being on PlayStation alone will not be that long. So
I think that's probably the better option, but just like dropping the third part on other platforms without the other two, I think it's not going to work.
Is it?
It could be PC and PlayStation, right?
PC.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
So you can play it on your Steam Deck. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Anything else? Otherwise, we'll... Slowly but surely.
Maybe I'll say one thing. Music in this game, we haven't really touched on too much. The new versions of the classic songs are just so good. Cosmo Canyon.
I think it was like, if I'm remembering correctly, like the pop dance song when you're trying to bodyguard the dog back to Junon.
Yes.
Like that song was awesome.
Did you guys notice that for the ones that did all of the open world activities, did you notice that the background music in each region got more intricate as you progress through the open world stuff? They added more layers as you completed objectives in the open world. I just thought that was so cool.
That's cool.
Specifically, again, why I think there's something weird going on with the Aerith scene. We get like the Aerith scene mixed with Genova's theme at that point. True. Like
that's true.
I definitely think Genova is going to be a bigger focus, even more. In the third one, and whether or not Jonova's the one pulling the strings more than Sephiroth. I just think that moment specifically, having Jonova's theme playing mixed with Aerith, is super important. And a big reason why I love Remake and this one so much is because music is used as a storytelling device a whole lot and to give hints as to where the story's going. So it's awesome.
Yeah, I love the music at the end of this one. I think that whole entire ending scene when they're loading up the plane and they're about to be wheels up. Yeah, that was like...
And it wasn't clean music, right? Off.
Yeah, it was awesome. Exactly.
Genova is Aerith, part 3.
Cloud freaking hiding the black materia in his sword? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's going to be wild.
Okay, let's quickly look at the last question. So how would you, our one worder final question. So what is the one word you'd use to describe your experience with Rebirth?
I'm going to cheat, Michael. I'm going to use two.
Go.
Let's mosey. I'm ready. I'm ready to go to the third one. I mean, I have my complaints are minor. As a fan of these characters and of this world, it made me fall in love even more with it. So I'm just, let's go. I'm ready. Bring it on.
Very cool. John.
I had to pick a word. It took me a little bit to think of something that might be appropriate, but it had to be a word that starts with RE, right? My word is reminiscent. So it's
nice one.
A game that I think like, in a lot of respects, and we talked about this when we talked about Remake, this is the game that we felt like we were playing back, you know, coming up on 30 years ago, but now we're seeing it realized in modern kind of setting. So I feel like it's got that nostalgia, that reminiscent quality to it. I guess that's my word, reminiscent.
Love it.
And my word is majestic. I think The way they expanded on a beloved world, so good and so rich, and they didn't really lose touch with the original atmosphere, original game in these things. I think as open world games go, it's very rare to see a world so well built and so rich in details that it doesn't feel empty at any point. So I know people can have some, and I do have some criticism in terms of the amount of content, but it's very deep in detail. It's not you never feel like you are going through an empty world. It's just every step you take is rich in detail. It's rich. The atmosphere is there. The music's there. I felt really great playing this game. That's the reason. That's my word. Majestic.
Love it.
I'll say tasty. I ate it all up.
Tasty. funny. Nice one. Yes. Colin.
I'm going to say special. Like this entire game, the entire remake project in general, but this one in particular is just such a special game. Like I mentioned before, the way that they took the entire world map of the original game and somehow managed to make it fully realized in one-to-one scale was such a treat. The amount of stuff that they added in there to do in it, and just all the story and character moments that they gave us with everything in this. Like, one of my favorite moments in all of Final Fantasy VII is Red 13 at Cosmo Canyon and his trials and stuff, and just the way that they fleshed it out in this game and the stuff that followed, which was new. Like, just this game is so special, and I will forever, forever cherish my time that I spent with it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'd probably say adventurous, because I say like it feel like it's like the environment. You never know what's around the next corner, because you had like so many different types of environments that they varied up. You got to like fly on a plane that later got retrofitted into now a skiff type boat, and then how the game just very ended. With basically, I mean, my take on it, watching that ending scene was like, hey, wheels up in five, let's go get that bastard. And I mean, that just like that whole like adventurous note to it, and it just felt that way. It was just it was just an epic adventure.
Totally. My word would be heartwarming, just because I think the characters have so much heart, and I think they've designed them and put so much story into them. Although Cloud, you know, kind of seems to turn into a dick, they're all kind of being very gentle with him as part of the story, and there's always a heart connection, you know? So yeah. And as I said, this was definitely one where I shed some tears. So for me, heartwarming. Thank you. And that brings us to the end of the discussion about Rebirth. And I really appreciate the input that we got from all of you. A very, very, very special game. And looking forward to having another conversation in about hopefully 3.5 years. With part 3. So, and with that thought, Marcus, back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I'll just say as well, thanks to everybody for coming out. We always, these are always like the highlight of my month. I can think I can speak for Michael as well in that. So next month, we're going to be talking about God of War Ragnarok, another very special game. I'm in the midst of my first playthrough of the game and enjoying it very much so far. So I am excited to chat with everybody who's going to be joining us for that one. So yeah, thanks everyone again for Rebirth.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
So bye, Kyle, everybody. maybe exactly, maybe you just say the final words because you have the recording button.
Guess what, Michael? Those are the final words. Bye, everybody.